never forget the first moment when I walked into a cinema. I was hooked from there on.
Hello and welcome to the 67 Skin On Podcast. This is our end of year special. Seems like only seconds ago we were talking to the last one. Yes. So, so this one we think we will forego the usual format and we will
debate the year.
Exactly. The year that was, in cinematic terms, a somewhat remarkable year in terms of a constant flow of decent to good films throughout the year. I mean,
I think we're living in different times, man.
No, I mean, you guys have had problems with not having any real standouts, you know, but...
There's been some. I think there's always good... Like, anybody says a terrible year for cinema doesn't dig deep enough.
Yeah.
But I do think there are banner years and stellar years, and I suspect this isn't one of the top level. It's been a good year.
Yeah. But 2012, shall we say, was a banner year.
Yes.
We haven't had one of those.
From an Irish perspective, though, 2015 has been... It's a landmark year.
It is.
And 2016...
And breaking through in an international sense.
Yeah.
I think it's been a landmark year. I completely agree.
So what we're going to do is we're going to talk down through each one of our top 10 films of the year. We're also going to talk about what was our surprises and disappointments and what we thought was the worst film of the year. And we'll round it off then at the end with a preview of what's coming in 2016.
I suspect we're probably going to have a lot of things in common in terms of what we're looking forward to. But anyway...
So we're going to go 10-10-10 all the way around and 9-9-9.
I like that. We'll take it in turns. Go on. Yes. We start with... Well, okay.
We're going after the Glorious. So we start with Darren.
Okay. Bridge of Spies at 10. Ooh, I liked it. Spielberg film. Very pleasant.
It is very pleasant, but I suppose my only problem with it is it's old school to a fault in that it doesn't do anything particularly gritty or, really, to stand out.
Well, what's interesting to me, as a Spielberg film, it's very much a traditional Spielberg film to the point where it features Tom Hanks as the lead. But it's the
first... And Janusz Kaminski filtering sunlight through every window.
Yeah.
I miss John Williams' name from the credits because he was busy doing Star Wars. I wouldn't mind seeing a different cinematographer on the credits next time.
Harsh.
I like Kaminski, but, God, this same... It's the same style he's doing since Minority Report.
Okay, well, it's the first Spielberg film that I saw where I actually thought pleasantly of my father. Which I think, in terms of Spielberg films, right? So Spielberg famously has the motif of the absent father. I think that Bridge of Spies is interesting because it really pushes the opposite of that. It feels like he's finally sort of come through and reconciled.
Yeah.
That's somewhat...
Yeah, like, Tom Hanks is playing... He doesn't have an absent father. He is an absent father, for a change. But he's not done in any way that is resentful.
No.
It's doing good. He's off doing good.
Yeah, and he comes home at the end, and he's...
Spoilers.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Based on a historical event, the Cold War did not...
Spielberg film.
Yeah, the Cold War did not suddenly turn hot when Tom Hanks failed to negotiate the handover.
Then what are we wearing these nuclear reaction suits for?
It's festive.
Why is everything so heavy in the future? Is there something wrong with the world? Is that
gravity. But no, I really, really liked it. And it gave me a nice warm, fuzzy feeling thinking of my dad and Tom Hanks' fundamental human decency preventing the outbreak of nuclear war.
We always have that.
Yeah.
I like it. Not as much as you, but I do like it. And Hanks is a very solid lead because he's Tom Hanks. That's what he does. Mark Rylance, great in a supporting role. As the Soviet mole living in the US... Hanks is tasked with swapping for somebody, a US pilot, who's been shot down in the USSR.
Yeah.
And the tense negotiations they're in. One thing we haven't mentioned about it, co-written by the Coen brothers.
Yeah.
And there are some very Coen-esque touches in it, I must say.
No, I don't think...
They're delightful, and you can just know it's them.
Yeah, it's a film with surprising little action for a Spielberg film. There are a couple of standout sequences, but I think it's very talky. Which is no bad thing, and I think it beautifully captures the time and a place. But anyway, sorry, that's enough for me. Jay.
The Lobster.
Oh. Ooh, nice.
Number 10. It's a film of two halves, as anybody who has seen it will know. One half, for me, is better than the other, which is the first half. When it leaves the hotel, it gets a little unsure, but which is not to say that the second half of it doesn't have either something to say or is not interesting or good.
It's just not as good.
And I think... It's a funny hybrid of, I can't pronounce his name, Philip.
Yorgos Lanthimos.
That's the one. His kind of, if you've seen Alps or Dogtooth, you'll know kind of where he's at.
A warped place.
Yeah, and to kind of pitch that, and there is an Irish kind of feel to it. It is shot here. It does feel kind of weirdly...
There are scenes in the second part from the Country City. That is Dublin. Yeah. There is no mistaking that. Yeah.
It stars in Parkins Hill and Kerry.
Yeah. And it's a terrific cast led by a never better Colin Farrell.
Agreed.
I don't think he's ever been better. And I
would
knew
we could do deadpan.
I genuinely put him in best actor territory if it was
fair.
I think he's that good. Wife was great. Olivia Colman,
she's
terrific. Ben Whishaw, John C. Reilly,
Michael Smiley,
all good. I really liked it, and it's percolated with me over the last few weeks since I've seen it, and it gives me a good feeling. I can't wait to see it again.
Oh,
so yeah, The Lobster.
Everyone else seen?
Yes, yeah. I just missed out on my, it was in my in the conversation for a while, and then I dropped it.
Yeah, I had something like 30 that I whittled down.
I had 24, and then I brought it down to 10. But yeah.
I had it down to a 10 from the start. I was pretty certain. It wasn't in my conversation. I like it, but like you say, it is a film of two halves, and there's a change in tone, a change. It comes very suddenly. It's so suddenly it jars, I find. The first half is incredibly blackly funny. I was gasping.
Yeah.
And then the second half, there's a lot less laughs. It's quite touching.
Yeah.
But it's also just because it changes so suddenly, the second half is denied a memorability that the first one has.
Terrific final scene.
Yes. Oh, the final scene, that's going to be debated
for
years.
That's a great old shot.
Like that last shot, you're just wondering, well,
please cut away.
What did? Don't cut. No. Okay, you can cut away from that, but please don't end.
Yeah.
I want to know what happened there. Yeah,
it is.
Yes, Lobster, definitely worth a rewatch.
My number 10 is the possibly last Studio Ghibli movie. It is The Tale of Princess Kaguya.
This is an interesting one as far as dates go, because it was made in 2013, came out in the US last year, and just got released at the start of this year.
Yes, so...
That's confusing.
It is a gorgeous hand-drawn animation, Japanese animation. Tells classic Japanese folk tale about a young girl who's found in a stalk of bamboo, and the parental sort of care and attention that she receives from the old bamboo cutter and his wife. It is it's just an absolutely gorgeous film, and if it is to be the last Ghibli, it is a fitting sort of swan song for them, because they are the finest animation house in the world.
I can't but agree with that.
Mm. I love this. It'd be in my top 20 to 25 of the year, I'd admit, but it is breathtakingly beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah.
The hand-drawn animation.
If I had criticism, I felt it was too long.
I would agree with that. That's probably the one thing that's keeping it on my list. It's,
same here.
I
felt it at a certain point.
It's 2.25 hours.
Yeah, that's a long time.
A quarter.
It's a slow burn
half an hour.
Throughout. So
I didn't mind the pace
as a result. Yeah. But,
which I didn't mind. That was deliberate. Very deliberate. But I appreciated that. It just maybe a little too much.
Yeah.
But I loved the look of it. Loved the characters. There's... Princess Kaguya is great, but her manservant, the Minowara, one of my favourite characters of the year.
Yeah.
She never even speaks.
Yeah.
I love her.
Philip?
My number 10 is A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night.
Very nice.
Yeah.
I suspect that might pop up at some point again.
It may do. It's the world's first Iranian vampire western, courtesy of debut director Anna Lily Amirpour, with the nominal girl played by Sheila Vand. Is
God bless her.
Oh, what this? That's a
good
that's
God,
a
just a camera lover.
This is a cracking debut for both. She's such a brilliant, eerie presence. Like she's gaming and kind of not terribly tall in her little whole niqab getup and her striped top, but.
And her skateboard.
Just brilliant. I mean, that's all very deceptive. You don't mess with this. When she turns, woo, blah, blah, blah.
I liked it a lot. It just missed out my top 10.
But I
like it a lot.
It is it's moody, it's stylish, it's cool.
It is good.
And this is not a word I want to use flippantly. It's sexy.
Yeah.
It is just...
Yeah.
Throbbing with life and energy.
Agreed.
I love it. It's It's like the best possible hipster-infused remake of Jarmusch's Only Lovers Left Alive you could imagine. It's
I can't touch that.
That's a selling point.
Yeah,
that's,
I can't top that. That's yeah. that's perfect.
It is the coolest film of the year. Love
yep.
it.
Cool. Number 9.
Okay. Darren, is he this?
The Force Awakens, but I suspect we might talk about that later when it comes up in somebody else's top 10.
And also, some of us haven't seen it.
Also,
okay.
we've already talked about it in the previous podcast. But anyway,
we've also talked about all these other things in previous podcasts. So we'll leave that circle around. So number 9, Jay.
It's The Force Awakens. No, it's not.
Despite having not seen it.
Yeah.
My stink eye.
In between those
strong.
Two podcasts, I've gone to see
it. Yeah.
Okay. No, I have not. It's Mummy. Javier Dolan's...
Monsieur Dolan.
His talented young bastard.
You really resent him for this.
I resent all young people that are younger than me, particularly
So
him.
All of us.
I don't consider you young, but anyway, you're the oldest young person I know, Phil.
Anyway.
Yes. I think this is his fifth film, would that be right?
It's fifth or sixth, either or, but that's
terrifying.
He's only 27.
It's 27, I think, yeah. It's disgusting. I love Mummy. It's a brutally wonderful melodrama with this wonderful aspect ratio of 1:1. And that breaks out on occasion in glorious style.
Gloriously cheesy with the soundtrack,
but
who
God
cares?
It works, though. It's almost punch the air stuff.
It really is.
Which really kind of...
That said, though, it's not some kind of hooray for everything.
Oh, good God, no. I mean, there's a lot of darkness here. The only thing that kind of puts me off, there's a kind of sci-fi kind of...
It's unnecessary.
...structure that...
But you forget about it. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, it disappears quickly. But it's just a wonderful... It's a family soap opera in the very best sense of the word. It's the kind of the importance of family and friends and who and what you consider family and how people you need become your family, no matter who they are in some ways. And it's a very mature work for somebody that young. I liked it a lot, and I think he's getting better and better. And his films are excellent. I'm a huge fan, and I love it. I can't wait to rewatch, actually. Mommy.
Mommy would be just outside my top 10. I loved it as well. Andor Val and Antoine Olivier Pilon. Two fantastic performances.
Val, it should be in everything.
really, and the whole thing is just brimming with life.
Yeah.
It's the energy to it. And again, for something that is, that, or indeed could have gone very soapy.
Yeah, I mean, the bones of a story is buried there. He makes it. And this is what we're talking about again. I think we're talking about another time about directors making something. I mean, the script, like the story, there's not really much to it. But it's what you bring to it, what your person is, how you invest in the story, and that brings it to life. And that is what
direction
is.
Yes, they are.
Yeah, great.
Yeah,
great.
You're a fan of Dorval as well, aren't you?
Dolan. I am a fan of Dolan, and Mommy was in my top 25 as well before I whittled it down. So
that's the thing, this whittling down is painful. We should stress also, this is based on Irish UK release dates.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of stuff that some of us will have seen that's not out until next year.
Yeah.
And expect
some hits later in the list that will be.
Last January.
Yeah, from last January.
Essentially.
Previous Oscar contenders.
My number 9 is Disney Pixar's Inside Out.
Very interesting.
It is. It floored me. It did. I thought that it was absolutely marvelous. I loved the emotionality of it. I loved
a film about emotions. You better have it.
The journey, the concept of joy having to understand sadness and vice versa in order to know themselves.
Saying to kids,
it's okay to be sad.
It's okay to be disgusted. It's okay to be angry and afraid. It's best to be joyful.
But.
And occasionally Bing Bong can visit.
Bing Bong.
Take her to the moon for me.
You know, the animation movies have given me three of my favourite characters this year. The Menawara from Kaguya. And in this one, Sadness, played by Phyllis Smith.
Great work.
Yeah. And Bing Bong.
Yeah.
Who is the protagonist's imaginary friend, played by Richard Kind. And he's just...
It's glorious. It's glorious, sad, tragic. Beautiful.
It has beautiful little sight gags. It has and
puns. Lots of visual puns.
Deja vu. There's a memory bank.
And it's a fully realized world within.
Yeah, and it makes sense.
Yeah,
but
it does make a lot of sense.
I
agree.
I think one of the things that's massively underrated because it's all the message stuff is great, but in terms of structure, it explains how its world works very well.
Lays it down. Yeah. And it's a tough thing to do. It's
all abstract.
But of course, it's the mind. Yeah. What is mind? No matter. What is matter? Never mind.
And it leaves the her mind to explore the other minds as well. Yeah. And some of them are just genius. Yeah. You know,
there's a lot of gags.
You move into the bus driver's mind and everybody's anger.
That's all kind of sports fans.
Also,
the Puerto Rican helicopter pilots.
Yeah. Also, good supporting roles for Diane Lane and Kyle MacLachlan, which I'm always.
It was number 14 on my list. Just missed out on top 10. I loved it.
It's just as I had my top 10.
It might be coming up at some point in the future.
My number 9, and I know this is going to crop up again and again, but this is the most insane slice of blockbuster action I have seen in years.
It's Jurassic World, isn't it?
Terminator Genesis.
Terminator
Genesis.
Oh, what a lovely day. It's Mad Max Fury Road. This, for pardon my French, this is batshit. And I love it.
It is brilliant.
It is.
I like it
for a film that is basically driving in one direction
and driving back.
It's a
lovely flip. I love that.
Yeah.
Let's just go back and go the other way. Where we already came. It's glorious.
But do you know how this came about? I was talking about this with somebody recently. Originally, George Miller was given $100 million to make this film. He brought a cut. Filmed it in Australia. Brought a cut of it to Warner Brothers, and they just looked at him and said, "That is great. Here's another $50 million. Do more." And so because of that, they had to go and film in Namibia somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah.
And thank God they did. They've had a mixed year this year, but full kudos to Warner Brothers for backing this from start to finish.
I quite like that about the studio, in fairness.
They've taken some risks
They take some massive risks, and they take some massive risks next year.
But we'll talk
about that later.
Later.
Like, if you had said at the start of the year that a Mad Max sequel was going to be on Best of List...
And was going to be a contender for Best Picture at the Oscars.
People would have laughed. Who hadn't seen the film?
Who's laughing now? Well, me, because I enjoyed it so bloody much.
I really like it. It's outside my top 10. It's in my top 20 comfortably.
Yeah.
But I liked it a lot.
Yeah, I think particularly the summer may not have been the best time for films this year.
To say the least.
No, the summer, the blockbuster slate was not great, give or take a Mission Impossible.
Yeah.
But I think Mad Max
Mission
was
Impossible
amazing.
Mission Impossible is in my top 25, just so you know.
Yeah.
Nowhere near mine, but...
Nowhere near mine either, but
This was the film of the summer for me.
Yeah, I think it's for most people.
It did everything that all the other blockbusters wouldn't do. It was risky. It was dark.
It had a female protagonist.
Yeah. And this is the thing. Everybody was complaining about Mad Max being sidelined, or potentially sidelined.
Have they not?
Number one, this is about people working together to survive. He needs these women. These women need his help. Everybody has a stake. That said, though, Charlize Theron as Furiosa, you're this awe-inspiring female protagonist who is just going to get through this hell no matter what. She's incredible.
Yeah.
And Tom Hardy is a fine replacement for, what's his name?
Mel Gibson.
Mr. Doolally, yes.
Yeah. And Nicholas Holt as well.
He's good. He's good as one of these subservient.
What a lovely day.
He's got the tagline of the year, doesn't he?
Yeah.
And there's George Miller as a feat of directing. Wow.
And again, it's another film like Inside Out, and in an era of sort of like world building and shared universes and stuff, like Inside Out and Mad Max managed to sketch entire worlds.
Yeah. We had seen this before in the original Mad Max, but this is another level.
Come into
economy.
It
without
seeing your
That's it.
Your
But it without necessarily even dialogue, without like physicality and production design and even body language communicates everything that you need to know about how the world works.
No, I liked it.
Loved it. Number 8, Darren.
Macbeth, which is perhaps a controversial choice.
Interesting.
I really, 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 really liked it.
I missed it, so...
Okay, I have a fondness for the source material.
What's the source material?
It's a little... You might have heard of it. It's based on... It's William Shakespeare. He's like...
Shakespeare!
It's like the 16th century's Aaron Sorkin.
Oh, who cares about William Shakespeare? He hasn't written anything in years!
Yeah, he's a 16th century J.K. Rowling. Who?
Right. Yeah.
No, I sorry got to keep pottering on. But yeah, no, I really, really liked it. I think Macbeth, as far as like the four great Shakespearean tragedies go, is probably the weakest of the bunch. In that it's not. It's less. Its tragedy is less well sketched, and it works best, arguably, as something as a horror. Like, it's not Titus Andronicus' level of violence.
No.
But it's a story that is macabre, that is unpleasant, that is psychologically disturbing. And I think that Kurzweil sort of nails that. I think it's a physically beautiful piece of film with two wonderful performances from Fassbender and Cotillard as Macbeth and Lady Macbeth. But I think visually it's stunning. And it's shot in the style of a horror. It's beautifully constructed. And I quite like the twist that he puts on the Durnham Wood as well.
That's fair.
Really? Do you see
it? Yeah, audio problems. It is difficult to understand.
It's a play featuring Scottish characters, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah. No, well, it's not just that. Is
it the language?
It's not
you weren't the only one to say that.
It's something a bit off about it. Maybe it's the soundtrack or something.
It might be the sound mix, maybe.
I think something briefly about that as well.
I suspect this is the Shakespeare element of it. Everybody knows the story.
Everyone knows
I can quote
yes.
I can the quote actual,
the actual dialogue
first.
Yeah, that's not the issue. Maybe the sound mix. I don't know.
Yeah. There was just something I did like it. I thought it was a good adaptation.
I thought it was the best adaptation of
Macbeth. Yes,
yeah.
I loved the visual look of it as well.
It is striking.
Yeah,
and Fassbender and Cotillard. But I just
surprisingly
subdued
reaction.
Warm to it.
No, it is.
Yeah.
The critical reaction has been surprisingly muted. Actually.
Yeah. Well, I get what Niall is saying. There is something a bit. I do like it. I think Cotillard is great.
Yeah.
She owns. I mean, if I had to pick a Lady Macbeth, well, there you go.
Yeah.
Fassbender, I liked him. The performance took a while to grow on me. Initially, I think he's quite a bit subdued. It's only when
that's with the
that
character
too much, but too much. I think there's he's less memorable in the first half.
And I mean that
shouldn't be. I know he's supposed to be a bit. I think Fassbender is too muscular and interesting an actor to play someone who can be that subdued initially,
but then he evolves into
once he starts,
there's a switch on Michael Fassbender, the director just flicks.
It's
the Magneto switch.
I liked it, but there is something a bit off there because I can't quite put my finger on it either. It's just the darkness is overawing, but then again, it is Macbeth. You can't get away with that. Get away from that, rather.
Yeah.
Yes. There are more interesting takes on the material. I suppose this is just taking the darkness and running with it.
But I think, in terms of where we are in 2015, right? So, in terms of like the questions that we're asking about, like in terms of masculinity and stuff like that, but also in terms of Macbeth as a character, I'd argue he's never been more culturally relevant than he is now in terms of Walter White, Tony Soprano, like the modern TV anti-hero.
True.
The arc is pretty much there. I would argue that like Macbeth is probably the most relevant of the great Shakespearean tragedies this cultural moment.
But Lear's always going to be there too, you know.
You're never going to get out of the shadow of Hamlet.
No, you're always going to have Lear, Hamlet, Macbeth. These are like they're there.
Yeah.
And Merchant of Venice as well, because you will never get away from commercialism as a follower.
Looking for your pound of flesh, of course. I think that's might be part of the problem. We have seen it a lot, and there's always going to be scope for people to adapt these plays. And Macbeth is one of Shakespeare's shorter tragedies, so it's a wonder there aren't more Macbeth adaptations.
I suspect that's probably why. where Homer stars in an adaptation of Macbeth. And actually, in fairness, for recent Simpsons, I thought that was quite clever.
There are other ways of doing it. This is quite striking for a cinematic version, but maybe the TV versions have it. I don't know.
Okay.
Your Sopranos, your
Walter
White.
I think you might be right.
Yeah.
But anyway, so enough from me. Jay?
I suspect this will be short and sweet. I suspect this is the only appearance this will pop up on this list.
What?
Adieu to language.
Oh, hello. Bonjour, Monsieur Godard.
I thought this was kind of astounding. It headache-inducing.
Yes.
Exhausting.
Yes, definitely.
Absolutely essential 3D film. Possibly the only essential 3D film.
Quite possibly.
And
what, ever?
Ever?
Ever. Wait, yeah.
Potentially. Cave of Forgotten Dreams?
That's no.
This is the one.
Avatar.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I know you don't like Cameron.
No. That's not essential. I've seen that
you actually
3D in 2D.
Have to see this.
You have
in
to see that. You actually have to see this in 3D because it only.
But there are scenes where it only works in 3D.
It only makes sense insofar as it can make sense in 3D. This basically tells every kind of 21st century generic cinema audience who are so used to kind of sound and visual cues to get out of the
take a hike.
It's this thing. You didn't. This is not what cinema is. You can rewrite cinema language very easily, very simply. I'm in whatever. I don't know what age God are. He's quite old. He's in his 80s now.
Yeah, he is.
And he says, "I'm going to take 3D and show you what you can do with 3D. That it's not all." Chode, you know, there's a fairy who comes out and twinkles stardust over the kids' heads, kind of.
Yeah.
There is more to it. There's more to cinema technology language than people that have been using it supposedly to the maximum level.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not suggesting everybody should do this.
Oh, no.
Because
this is perhaps saying this is what you can do.
Yeah.
I probably shouldn't.
And about 80 to 90 minutes is about as much. And God, I'm smart enough to know that it shouldn't be any longer than that. And I wish other filmmakers would learn that lesson.
Mm.
But I think it's kind of brilliant. It's bewildering. It's weird. It's frustrating. It's everything in short that cinema should be.
It is quite remarkable in its form. Content, forget about
content,
it.
Content, it's Goddard. I mean, it's Goddard. People wandering around talking nonsense about relationships. But still.
And imperialism
and and
how, often while sitting on the toilet.
But there's some great stuff when it does this cutscene to. There's the kind of this kind of dramatic music, and a boat comes into the harbour, and you need to set up the scene, and then it's replayed about four times.
Yeah,
exactly.
And you're like, why?
Well, the reason why, as far as I could see, the reason why is
to pull the rug.
You know exactly when you hear the big music and the thing coming
building
in, what's going to happen? Because this is what we are. Then it's not. It's subverts that all the time.
But
we got to run it again. I'm running you again until you get the message.
Yeah, and then comes in the 3D scene.
Yeah.
Where so it's practically showboating.
3D basically scenes. You basically can one eye open and one eye close. You can
and you get a different scene depending on which eye you look through.
It's incredible.
It is quite
and for there's a kind of a sex scene for like there. You can watch which person you want to see naked. Almost kind of with which are you? It's absolutely
so
fascinating.
I don't see either because it's quite.
It
turns the picture quality is actually quite badly.
But I think also that's the point because Goddard has shot great films. He knows what he's doing.
Exactly.
This is also the point. You can make great art by just basically using your experience, just throwing something together,
great art. I don't know, but certainly you can make a statement.
But it's very much there. I thought it was excellent. I really liked it. Mm. So number 8,
very good.
Bullet.
Cool.
My number 8, and it will make a reappearance on at least on my colleague Mr. Bagman's list, is the best film ever made about the Prime Directive. It is Hard to Be a God.
Oh, wow.
Hard to Be a God is unbelievably difficult to watch, but absolutely essential watching. It is hardcore sci-fi.
Tried to get it in before this podcast, couldn't make it happen.
I will.
It's on my list. It's been on the list for a while.
Yeah, it's sci-fi without sci-fi.
That's it, because it's a group of guys are sent to a planet and they can't interfere with what's going on there.
Because the planet is essentially the same as Earth, except it's about 800 years behind. It's
the
Dark Ages.
And,
well, the thing is, the people on this planet, they don't want it to happen.
Yeah.
And things are happening that any kind of intellectual is now going to be persecuted.
Yeah.
And the world is caked in piss and shit and blood. And everybody is oozing. And everybody is buck-toothed.
It's
everybody
such a
is...
my movie.
It is. For 3 hours, Jay. Stalker is a laugh riot compared to this.
Oh, God, okay.
Stalker is... You see, the different... I've maybe mentioned this before in terms of like the difference between, say, Tarkovsky and someone like Bela Char. Whereas Tarkovsky is always hopeful. Tar
is very opposite.
Tar is not hopeful. But forget it.
Tar is making comedy.
If Tar is the absence of hope.
Alexander Jerome.
No. If Tar is the absence of hope, Alexei German's the black
is
hole.
The negative hope. He is despair.
Anti-hope.
Anti-hope.
But he's dead now anyway, isn't he?
So. Yes. Well, yes. Well, he died before this was released.
Yeah. So, I mean,
his son, Alexei German Jr., had to take over the editing.
Yeah.
And it is...
The production design, the cinematography.
Yeah, and it sits with you for days after watching.
Okay, right, I've got to get this watched. Yeah, I've got to get this watched and soon.
You must.
Yeah. Godspeed.
I shall.
It is the most art housey of all the films that we're going to talk here. And I mean, I say that with Goodbye to Language.
Yeah,
like Goodbye to Language is like it's confrontational, but it's only 80 minutes.
This
loads you in with the prospect of being shot in a conventional way with a potential narrative, but it doesn't matter. You are going to be dragged through this muddy, shitty world, and you are going to take it.
All right, I will. I shall.
Yeah.
It might be back.
Yeah.
Spoiler.
Yeah. At 8, don't know if this will be making an appearance again, but by God, it should be. 45 Years. I love this film. It's got my favourite performance of the year from Charlotte Rampling, telling the story of she and Tom Courtenay's characters, a married couple who are about to celebrate this anniversary, and then he gets word that a former girlfriend who died on a mountaineering trip 50 years before, her body has been found encased in ice on a glacier in the mountain. Now, that's about as much context as we get. We don't see anything of this.
Not necessarily either in some ways.
No.
It's
an evocative.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a chamber piece.
Yeah.
And it is played and directed beautifully. It's directed by Andrew Hay, who gave us Weekend. And he sees the two films as companion pieces because these are about couples whose, like, the Weekend was about this young gay couple who were just hooked up for a weekend and the potential of their future.
Yeah.
This is about an older couple who've been married for so long, and now this twist is threatening the future of their relationship
and their past
and their very past. Exactly, it completely throws things in a new light. And how do you portray that? Minimally. I was reading somewhere recently where John Louis Trintignant, star of Amour, a very similar themed film, he was talking about, he had a quote where he said, the best actors are the ones who can feel the most and show the least. This is an exemplar of that. Rampling's getting all the praise for this film, but Tom Courtenay as well.
That's great.
They're both terrific examples of minimum fuss performances, but the emotion is all there, and the film just haunted me for days afterwards. And the final scene is a gut punch and a half. There's a lot of gut punches
I felt the film overall was a little too minimal for the most part, and it kind of took away what I was hoping. It was a little too restrained for me, and it only came to life at certain points, I'm not damn with praise. I really liked it, but it didn't go higher. Like, it's in my top 20, but it didn't make my top 10. But I can see why it would be in anybody's top 10.
Yeah.
And the performance are terrific. And the last scene's amazing. And some of the stuff in it, I preferred Weekend. If you're talking about Andrew Hay, I preferred Weekend as a film.
Yeah.
But I know exactly where you come from.
I can see what you mean, because it does threat. It is minimal, almost to a fault in my book.
Yeah, to a fault, to a slight fault in my book. But I take your point, though.
Yeah, it's not mile a minute pulses racing, but
nor was I expecting. I don't know. I don't know what I was expecting, and I'm not even saying they're wrong. I'm just saying for me there was something. I'll rewatch and I'll see if I revise.
Well, who knows? But there are certain things, just scenes where Rampling would put her hands on Courtney's, or she'd look off. Every glance has something
and
in it.
They're so good.
The last scene,
one of my favourite songs as well.
The platter, smoke gets in your eyes. The best use of any song in any film this year.
No arguments.
Wow. Took my breath away. So anyway, that was an emotional round, number 8. What's everybody's number?
You have a lie down, Phil.
Yeah,
Darren. What's at number 7?
Number 7, Inherent Vice. This is one of the great ones from earlier in the year. Brilliant film. Paul Thomas Anderson, very weird, very wacky, as one might expect for adapting a Thomas Pynchon novel.
Which I'm reading at the moment.
Oh, how is it? You've seen the film, obviously, so...
I have.
I assume it's a lot.
Inherent Vice would be just... It'd be top 15 for me. I'm only sorry it didn't, because there was a lot of stuff there that could have been in right at the end of the top 10.
Yeah.
It's... As an adaptation of the novel, it is A grade. It completely gets this rambling, often on... It's going nowhere a lot of the time. And we were talking about this, Jay, when the film came out. This is exactly the film's point. It is supposed to be rambly. It is supposed to be a fog.
And, the stop following plot, I think, is thing, because it catches spirit and tone.
It's capturing the end of the 60s. Yeah. It's the idea of that faded idealism giving way
to the... It's petering out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which I think is also, again, and I love the way it's like Darren top 10 bingo, the word timely is the one to mark on your cards, people. in terms of, because I think we've reached sort of the end of the current fascination with the 60s as well.
Mad Men's over.
Mad Men's over. Obama, who was praised as, you know, the new
Kennedy
of
our time.
Yeah, the new, that sort of thing. The
Star
Trek reboots, everything like that. I think in terms of cultural moments, the idea of sort of a faded opportunity, a faded Camelot. I think it really speaks to that.
And I was talking about Best of Enemies earlier, and how that almost dovetails exactly with that kind of thing. That faded dream of this could almost be great, and then it's not, and it'll never be probably again.
Yeah, that's it. And even in terms of the Republican debates and stuff like that, which Donald Trump were happening.
But Donald Trump's is when what you see started with Nixon, you end up with Donald Trump. I mean, that's like...
Scary.
It is scary.
And I mean, it has, and even in terms of just talking about it, stopping talking about the timeliness, it's got a fantastic ensemble. I mean, Josh Brolin's great, Joaquin Phoenix is amazing.
Joaquin Phoenix is just another crazy performance.
And even Martin Short, who's very much a taker of the commodity.
Like,
he's amazing.
Well,
you know, everybody, Martin Donovan. He's only in it for one scene. Their eyes are so sad.
Yes, they're all perfectly calibrated. I think it's fantastic. Like,
Catherine Watson as well.
So. Oh, she's great. Yeah. I said in my review, if I had to give advice to anybody, I would quote another of the great movie singers. Sit down, man. Take control. Find your neutral spice. are your aerials. And I could hear Doc Sportello, as played by Joaquin Phoenix, saying that very line. Here are your aerials, man. When he treats objects
like
women,
man.
But amazing. And even just talking about it now, I'm flashing back to odd moments of insight, like the bit where what's his name shows up, guy who played Omar from The Wire,
Michael K. Williams
pops up for a scene that, you know, it's very brief, goes absolutely nowhere, but does a wonderful bit of providing context, providing flavor.
Yeah,
everything about it, like there's visual clues all through. It's going to reward so many watches.
Yeah,
I want to watch it again.
Yeah,
I've seen it twice already, but I need to see it again.
Yeah.
So especially having read the book, nearly finished.
Cool. So that was my 7. What was yours?
That may pop up again.
That may pop up again. Deadly. Sorry to sing your thunder.
7 is Denis Villeneuve's Enemy.
Another one that is just hovering outside my top 10.
In my 25 and last.
I loved it. I absolutely loved it. It's the tobacco stained cinematography. Was just the thing. It's brown. It's yellow. It won't get off your fingers. Everything about it. It's draped over the city. It's Gyllenhaal's best performances, possibly.
Possibly.
I think he's great, and he reacts against himself very, very well.
Very convincing.
Yeah, I think he's terrific.
He's
and
two
interesting characters, and not overdoing it. Really, really subtle kind of touches and differences.
No, it's like he's watched Irons and Dead Ringers, definitely. Dead Ringers is a clear touchstone for this.
Yeah.
The the Toronto setting.
Yeah.
The twins.
Oh, very much so. I mean, you can't
the psychosexuality
of Canada. Like, I mean, you can't. And I think what you get here as well is brevity to some degree with Villeneuve's films. I think I kind of like Sicario until I didn't.
I'm
Prisoners is far too long, by at least an hour.
Prisoners works until the third act.
Yeah.
Unsung Dido.
The first hour I liked, and then
I wasn't the biggest fan of Unsung.
I haven't seen
again,
it.
Again. It's been ages since I've seen it, but I remember feeling the same way. I remember liking the first two acts and not liking the third.
This is his best film. It's lean, it's intense,
and
has some stunning imagery. I mean, stunning stuff.
Those final moments, that penultimate shot.
Jesus.
Holy heck.
Hair stand on the back of my neck. And even the opening shots of, in a kind of club based
it's almost like he's in a pool of ink.
The film feels heavy. It feels like there's a weight on
it. Feels like there's a stink of cigarette smoke all
it
around.
It does. I loved it. I loved the feel of it. I've watched it twice.
Yeah.
And there's more to it than any of his previous films, I think. Oh, and I liked it a hell of a lot.
Yeah, I struggle to think that this is that in the same year, we got this and Sicario. I cannot put the two together. There are things about Sicario I like, but nowhere near.
No, same here.
I loved Enemy, and I'm only sorry. It's just outside my top 10.
That's 7 for me. Smile.
7 for me is Mad Max Fury Road.
Hey, back
the Fast and the Furious.
I adored it. It was. It's just, it's bonkers, but brilliant.
At the heart of it all, there is something very primal and basic about its message. There's that statement that says the prisoners that Max and Fury are also rescuing, we're not things. We are not things.
It's incredibly lean as well. It's very much pared back. It is,
it's back an to engine. Basics. It's an engine.
It is flat out. From the get-go as well, and it's just a heady rush of a film.
There's an argument made that it's basically one long chase sequence that just changes form,
and I have no problem with that.
That's true. Spielberg did that with Duel, and so it can be done.
So I'm going to be the only one that's on the top 10, aren't I?
But
I
close, I'm sure.
Probably, yeah, it was top 10.
Philip.
Jay didn't like it, people.
I liked it a lot.
He
I
wasn't
it twice.
Mad about
I
it.
No. I really like it. Just
I was
not
mad.
Quite that level.
I was mad about it to the max.
Indeed.
No, I know you did. We watched it the same screen, and I think we were both very enamored.
My number 7 is National Gallery.
Ooh. Well, I haven't seen it.
Frederick Wiseman.
I will also put out that I've never seen a Wiseman film. So
you need to start.
I do. I just don't have 5 hours to give.
National Gallery is only 3. So
that's
doing?
A veritable speedy one.
I've
heard good things. I'm being flippant. Yeah, I have heard good things.
Yeah. Well, now, funny enough, it was released here this year, but I tried to see it last year, very near, and I didn't. But anyway, it was out here this year at last. I really liked his one beforehand at Berkeley. Not so hot on his next one in Jackson Heights. That's out in Ireland next year.
And the year after, I last that long. So both years.
But National Gallery is his portrait. Oh, ironically, it's his portrait of a gallery, and it's just basically 3 hours capturing the gallery, the exhibitions, and all the behind the scenes stuff that goes on. And so it is
we're talking about
fixing
observational.
Oh, completely observational because. Wiseman himself never appears. He never kind of.
I like that in a documentary.
This is like, if you're into that sort of thing, where you are watching this world unfold.
I'm adding something else to my Christmas bloody holidays. Aren't they? Royals, they got Wiseman in there as well.
Yeah, it's the most elegant exemplar of nuts and bolts documentary.
We discussed this before, and I have meant to get to one. I will get to one, and we will show it off.
If we have to talk about one of his recent ones, this one.
All right, good enough.
Love it.
6.
Whiplash. And we're entering the stage of the list where
in my top 25.
I'm flashing back
in my top
60. In the air. Oh, cold reception.
I was around 30-ish.
Okay. Close to my top 10 either. And I realise that Jay and I are in a minority on this one.
Yeah,
Whiplash.
I'm used to being in the minority, so that's fine.
Yeah, I need to get used to that.
You do, Phil.
I really do. I don't know why, but whenever I end up disagreeing with people, I find I get insulted very
easily. It's a fine performance. But
J.K. Simmons is phenomenal.
Simmons sells the whole bloody shit.
Yeah,
out of it,
absolutely.
It?
More than that, it's the best horror film. Okay, no, it's quite possibly the second best horror film of the year. But I think this year has been really good for. Despite the fact the summer wasn't great, I think it's been great for genre.
Yeah, the darker thriller type film.
The darker thriller, even the horror films.
Well, I mean, we've been talking about Enemy and things
So Enemy, for example, I would argue that Macbeth is very much a horror film. It Follows narrowly missed my top 10.
Yeah, it was quite a bit away from mine. I didn't really like it.
I must catch up on that.
Okay, it's very, very good. I would wholeheartedly recommend it. Jay would not, on the other hand.
I liked it.
This is why I need to know who I agree with. But we're talking about a different film here.
We are.
Whiplash,
which is just... But that's the thing. It's basically an engine for that sort of story. It's incredibly tense. Sitting in the cinema watching it was an experience. It's despite the fact you're an audience, you're a passive observer. And I found that I was tense. I found that it really... got to me.
It has a rhythm.
Which is appropriate for a movie about drumming.
It is percussive.
Drumming is the heartbeat of the film. Yeah. I found it, basically, in terms of visceral, in terms of construction, in terms of that performance from J.K. Simmons. And then the cathartic release of the in the final scene as well, I thought was well earned.
I'd be interested to see what people like a very very
see
few films.
Yeah, see
well,
how it ages.
I'd be fascinated to see how it ages. Yeah. I suspect not brilliantly, but we'll see.
I suspect it won't be marked as an all time classic. I suspect it'll be well thought of though.
I didn't dislike it. I just didn't get the fuss.
Okay. No, same here. I saw
like it was fine, and Simmons is great. I was like, really?
Simmons is.
It reminded me of it. A really disturbing version of Dead Poets Society.
Yeah, and that's
essentially what it was. Like, it's dressed up as something more, but it's not really more.
It's a perfect example of what it was.
Yes,
it wasn't even everything claims to be high art. I mean,
that's the thing. It's a genre film.
To be high art,
no, I think it's been claimed as. I think that's the problem.
Okay.
Like, in terms of it. I would argue it's more of a genre piece than a prestige piece, but it seems to have somehow got bundled in with prestige.
I think
the issue with it is it's something that is not as unique as either it or its supporters think.
Yeah.
There's a surprising degree of conventionality underneath that.
I'll give it. Like,
I agree.
In terms of, but
does that matter?
I would argue it's a great suspense. It doesn't have to be unique or wonderful.
I completely agree, but I think if you're selling your film as this and it's not quite that,
I think
it's like that takes it away from the film for me.
I don't think, though, the film was selling itself.
I think it's selling itself as something different. And to some degree unique in how it's structured and how they were selling
it.
What
the film attempted to be and
what was marketed in its original form
is not what the distributor...
What got the Oscar nomination.
I saw it before the hype came out. I saw it at the festival last year and the audience was really going for it and I get that. But I think the reason they were able to go for it is because underneath all that bluster and all the terrifying abuse that J.K. Simmons can hurl out...
is a comfortable film.
Mm.
See, I don't know. That's where I would be at. I think the film does ask some vague... It doesn't ask them particularly well. It doesn't dig into them in much depth. But I think the underlying question is an interesting one in terms of the idea of the suffering artist as a figure that we deem
worthy.
Does he
have to suffer?
That's it. No, but as a figure we deem inherently worthy in society.
But it mentions it by story. But that's kind of all it does. It pays lip service to the idea while it's going off on its own thing.
I'll tell you what. I'll put it in terms that the film itself can understand. Good job.
Harsh. Yeah,
all right, Jay.
One of my six.
A bit of mood with
We can relatively speak through this in her voice. I suspect if it hasn't reached the heights of The Master and There Will Be Blood, which are two of the best films this century, I would suspect as the years go by, as we talk about how films are aged and how they're seen, I think the stock in this will rise.
It's going to linger.
I do think it will. I think it has staying power. I think it's fascinating. I think it's dreadfully melancholic, like really so. And the second watch really brought that home more so.
Yeah. It definitely.
Well, it's the death of a dream.
Yeah, it is, and that's what I find that profoundly sad. And especially
if you don't
oversell it. Like you don't. It's not. Anderson is pointing out and saying, "Look, I'm selling this." It's throughout the film. It's woven through it.
It's there. There's a melancholy in it, like the words in a stick of rock. It's there all the time, just under the surface, under the madcap adventures.
Yeah.
And you're absolutely right when you mention it in the context of The Master and There Will Be Blood, because there are people who are there looking for hope, looking for their fortune, looking for God, looking for whatever.
Yeah.
And this is about people who have looked. And they can't find it beyond, the next hit.
The only other thing I'd say before I move on, there's a shot in it, and I think I mentioned you before, Philip, the part where Doc, when he wakes up beside the dead body on the beach, just near the start.
Outside the strip mall.
That shot is essentially taken from one of the final shots on Shannon the Lou, which is one of my favourite films of all time.
Yeah.
And it's a glorious thing to see side by side of Anderson, who really... really knows this in the industry.
He does.
It's glorious, and it's just wonderful. Anyway, Niall.
My number six is my most enjoyable experience at the cinema this year. It is Star Wars The Force Awakens.
Knew it would pop up.
Yeah, six is... Yeah.
I don't object to that at all.
No. I had
blast.
As we knew you
would. I absolutely loved every minute of it. So
okay.
We got to see this.
So you're talking about the movie that shatters dreams.
Talk to me about the film.
Well, yes.
The film, from a Star Wars fan point of view, because I can't distance myself from that, I am a
fan.
Fair enough. It is everything that I wanted it to be. It is everything that
you
I wanted
ask
it
much
to
more,
be
really.
In a Star Wars film. It is. But it fits into the universe very comfortably. It both extends the story and brings it in a new direction. It uses what is familiar and to tell a new story.
Yeah, I find... Yeah, again, we talked about this a little while earlier, but I find the three characters, the three central protagonists of the story, to be interesting. They're the most interesting elements of it because they're the only parts that don't feel repurposed. And I think Abrams repurposes these elements very, very well. But I think it's the new elements that are interesting. Like,
yeah, that is very true. And the same for Kylo Ren in terms of the fact that he has a different... He's bad for a different reason than Darth Vader is.
Yeah.
Darth Vader
well, I mean,
is bad. You know,
they don't labor the point in that the Empire of the First Order is still a Nazi analogy, but the opening shot of a massacre of a village on a desert planet by a bunch of zealots is very much repurposing it for the 21st century.
Sounds like a barrel of laughs.
No, obviously it gets a bit lighter, and as I said, you get
For kids.
Yeah, for kids. You do get, I find it real, and then you go from that to the most obvious invocation of the triumph of the will in the history of the franchise, which is remarkable.
Yeah, that is quite something.
It is quite something to out Nazi the first three original trilogy films.
So what we're saying is, if we're going to compare J.J. Abrams, forget Spielberg, he's Lenny Riefenstahl.
Well, you can put that on the poster if you want.
Yeah, I'd gladly take that.
But no.
Hell, be on a Star Wars poster. I'm all for that.
No, I loved it. Loved the three characters as well.
Yeah, it is. It's just... It is the film that I will return to most often from this year. And that for that reason alone, I have to have it.
Oh, great. It's this year's Guardians of the Galaxy.
It is...
I find that's the best way to rank a top ten. In terms of the film that you think you're going to go back to, the film that you're going to treasure, the film that you're going to show to your kids. Will show to his kids.
Oh, I will most certainly show to him.
Oh, that poor boy. I just feel like all these... I'm going to go see it, of course, but I just feel like all these, it's come with a lot of stipulations.
Yeah, no. Understandably.
Anyway, back to my grim... I'm sorry, Niall. I feel like I'm down... I'm putting
it's
down
okay, Niall. I'm with you.
Yeah,
I probably bloody love the thing. Ermagerd, Bistur, whatever. Number six for me is Clouds of Sils Maria.
Ooh.
Which I haven't seen.
Okay.
I really like this one. It really grew in my mind from when I saw it first. It's first of all, it's the proof that Kristen Stewart is worth a damn. She's good. She's very good.
She's solid.
She's good.
I don't know if I'm prepared to watch it to see that.
Julie Binoche's in
it. Yeah, Binoche's really good.
Okay. Well, Binoche's always really good.
Yes.
In fact, there is no such thing as a bad Binoche performance. She's great here as an aging actress who is having to struggle with the prospect of taking on a... What?
I'm trying to dig it through.
Yeah, we are. She was in Chocolate, right?
Yeah, Chocolate is the one that's gone straight into my head.
It's a wonderful. So did. I used up all my English.
Hey, Chocolate, she's not bad enough. But anyway, she's having to play a role she's taking on a role in a play that once made her famous, but this new adaptation is she's playing a different role, an older role, and she's having to struggle with the fact that her career is getting on, she's getting on, and new young faces, in this case Chloe Grace Moretz, are taking over.
That's
and what the Sunset
Boulevard, though.
It is Sunset Boulevard. It's every film made about women in show business ever, basically.
Yeah, exactly. But this one is less hysterical. It's a bit more cerebral. There's a bit more thought put into it. And it's out of the usual milieu of Hollywood or anything like that. It's directed by Olivier Sayas, and it takes place predominantly in France and Switzerland. And taken out of, the usual confines you would expect and the usual kind of hysterics and heights you would expect, there's something I think a lot more thoughtful at work here, and it helps that Binoche is great and Stewart, who is in the film as her assistant, she is there providing a striking counterbalance to her, because Binoche's character does have to get hysterical on occasion, but there she is playing an active not dull, one note, but very determined counterbalance to that.
and they're great together. And right. I enjoyed it immensely.
I've seen. I shall see it sometime.
I was not as keen, but I think Binoche was great.
Okay,
cool. But don't worry, we're going to do that the opposite way around now. Mm-hmm. At number five, A Most Violent Year. There we go, guys. Jump on, pile on.
No,
there's no point in me saying anything.
You hated it. Jay hated it, and Phil did not care.
I liked it.
No, you were middle.
I was. Well, that was a film.
I think those words are exactly. Yeah.
That's on the poster. Actually, it was a film. Scan on.
No doubt about it.
Yeah, it happened. That was
some stars.
I liked parts of it. I liked the emotion of it. I liked the look of it. But yeah. I just thought
and the performances.
I liked a lot of it. Yeah. I think. I know what Jay's problem with it was, is he'd seen it all before.
Yeah.
Or so he
every
thought.
Every single bit of it.
I think...
Everything.
I like
reconstituted really? Parts.
No.
I think that's dismissing it out of hand. Yeah.
I'm not dismissing it out of hand. I went sat through the whole thing.
I think there are... What I liked about it is that, yeah, there is stuff you've seen before, but it's played with enough and subverted enough. That
and
saying,
beautifully
it's
shot enough.
It is.
It's very beautifully
like,
shot.
And I mean,
that
like...
That's a, all I can give
it's
it.
It's a well...
Hold on. Not Jessica Chastain.
Who's
not
playing
Oscar.
The same role. Jessica Chastain's
yeah,
Chastain
don't think
the mob dog.
No, it's
I
not her best work.
It's not even good work. It's
she
barely...
Said,
barely
if we're talking about performances, Oscar Isaac giving Al Pacino's best performance in 20 years.
But that's the point, though. It's like it's aping... Do you know, it's like I've seen this.
Well, yeah, but then again, within the confines of the modern
and I
genre,
like Isaac.
There aren't a lot of places to go, and this does at least try
but
to go somewhere
mean,
different.
Does it?
It does, because he wants to stay out of the mob.
Yeah,
that is exactly the point.
And even
and
the
well,
ending...
Well,
the
time is out, they drag me.
But, well, he's trying not... Exactly, he's trying not to get dragged back.
And I really like the ending of it. In fact, a lot of the...
The ending?
Yeah.
What, with the oil?
Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
It's imagery.
I wonder if we're going to see Manhattan in the background at some point, too.
The fact that he manages to do it without getting his fingers dirty. And the fact I thought that was nice. In terms of...
Yeah, symbolism. Yes.
Yeah, like I like
Jesus,
symbolism,
on the
guys.
Nose and there's on
the...
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, it's, the symbolism is quite heavy handed
really
at some
like,
point. I'm with you. Not as far with you, but...
Yeah, no.
This is down in the bottom trough of my list.
Okay.
Swiveling around with films such as Jurassic World.
Oh!
I'm not even kidding. It's not at the bottom.
Jay, who told you about my number one?
Say this. It's in the bottom 10.
Oh.
Of the year.
Very
unfair. This is
very
the year that gave us Terminator, Genesis, and Pixels.
I didn't see Pixels. Terminator, Genesis.
That's his excuse.
And Minions.
I tried to purposely avoid terrible films.
But
in my defense.
So you feel bad that it tricked you, basically.
No,
I reeled you in.
Really. I'm not massive on Chandler. That's down there, too.
Okay.
I liked Marge Hall. Didn't particularly like All Is Lost, and I really didn't like this.
Okay.
So he's 1-3 for me.
Okay, cool.
Well, this is the problem, differing opinions.
Yeah, this is good.
This is good. Go for it. Anyway, sorry, that's mine. Yours. Jay.
Fine. He's out of energy now.
The Duke of Burgundy. Now we're back on track, Philip.
I'm hugging myself.
In my top 25,
I'm not a huge fan of Strickland's previous film,
Barbarian Sanctuary.
I liked it well enough, but I felt it just didn't quite do enough for me.
I liked it a lot.
This did a lot more.
I prefer Barbarian Sanctuary.
Oh, really? Fascinating.
I do, yes.
I thought the Duke Murdy is quite stunning in lots of ways.
It is both sensual.
It's unbelievably sexy film.
Whiplash is only the second best portrayal of a sadomasochistic relationship.
But deep down,
I don't know. Nothing will ever top Twilight.
but like it's sensuous and sensual.
But what it really comes down to, what's underlying the film,
Shades of Grey was out this year.
Tells me that's a better film than people give it credit for. I don't know why.
But it does have a contract scene where Dakota Fanning talks about exactly how much fisting is involved.
I need to see this.
Anyway, sorry, that was a bit of a tangent. Go ahead.
How do you pass? How do you step over? That's like going on after the Beatles.
Try. No, I Duke of Burgundy.
I think deep down, what Duke of Burgundy is about really is about trying to sustain relationships and aging, because it underlying this kind of the effort it takes to keep going
because
to satisfy and make happy whoever the other person is.
You know, so you have this relationship between Sitzibab and Knudsen, yeah, and Ciara Danner.
Who are both sensational. Oh,
yeah, great.
And I don't think there's a man in the film. It's great.
Oh, no, there isn't. It's fantastic. You know, it's such
a relaxing feeling, I have to say. But I loved it. I don't know.
Do you do anything with like ASMR or anything like that? Because this is like a whole film of that. The film has, in the opening credits, there's a perfume by credit.
Yeah.
That's what we're talking
there's
about.
There's a
here.
Scene which I don't that really want to
like,
describe.
You know, Transformers esque. Yeah. Product.
Oh, but this earns its perfume license.
Oh, it's
like spotting a Heineken Inspector.
Yeah.
No, that was the kid behind you.
Yeah, that was one of my favorite movie moments of the year was the kid watching Spectre going, Heineken! As if he'd just spotted Waldo. Anyway, sorry, continue.
I think I finished. If you haven't seen it, see it. I'm really looking forward to watching it again. It's great. Really great.
The best adjective I can come up with that film is it's delicious. I love it.
It might
be reappearing.
Excellent.
Yay!
Niall.
My number five film of the year is the one that gave me all the feels. The one that I was emotionally compromised by.
But you already said Inside Out.
It's not Inside Out. It's the one that hit me even harder on an emotional level.
But you've already mentioned Star Wars.
And it's not Star Wars.
Brooklyn.
No.
Oh.
It's Room.
It's a documentary.
Oh.
It's the Queen of Ireland.
Oh.
Ah.
Yes.
I haven't seen it.
Well, yeah. Either way, it's on my watch list as well.
Yeah, this is Conor Horgan's documentary about Panty Bliss.
Our neighbour across the road from where we record it.
We can see the sign from here.
Yeah. We can.
It is...
We've never seen Panty, though.
Not yet.
Should have her in for a drink.
It's a time capsule of Ireland... This year in particular.
The greatest day in possibly Ireland's history.
Yeah. The film...
No, quite
the 21st century. That May Day results game in was one of the best days. I went out all day for that day. I was in town, I was up at Dublin Castle, went for lunch, came back to town.
It was the happiest I've ever seen in this country.
It's amazing.
The 21st century.
Yeah.
That's
great.
Not hard, to be
no,
fair.
It's not.
No, but that was Italian 90s.
Yeah, it was. It was, if not
but it actually mattered.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Sorry, guys.
When they set out to make the film 4 years ago, they couldn't have that this was going to happen.
What a lovely way!
And how Panty Gate would come about, and how the
it's amazing.
And how the marriage referendum book ends it, and it just
perfectly.
Hits you.
Like, I can't wait to.
It makes you proud to be Irish in a deeply non-patriotic way. This is something
we've done the
that
decent
we did
thing
as,
finally.
As a country.
As humanity, basically.
Yeah.
This is what we did was to see that we changed people's lives and we changed the definition of love in this country, or at least what is accepted to the wider audience as being a legitimate form of love. And it is, I was in bits. And it's also the funniest film that I saw this year. It is hilariously funny.
I can't wait to see it.
So that is my, that's my number five. Philip, you're number five.
My number five. Where's my list? My number five, and I'm surprised it hasn't cropped up so far, which leads me to suspect that it might not crop up again. Pity.
Birdman.
Yes. I get that this, more than any film recently that I can think of, this has suffered such a backlash since it won Best Picture at the Oscars.
Which is amazing. I didn't like it before. I thought it was okay, and then it settled, and I thought, nah.
Okay.
I came into the cinema saying it. You can look back on Twitter and find my tweets about it. Go for it.
I won't.
Knock yourself out.
Keaton is extraordinary.
Yeah.
No argument there.
Yep.
I loved just how bitter and energetic with that bitterness it was. And, yeah, of course it's not one take. I know that. Yeah, of course it's taking pot shots at easy targets. I know that too. But I can't think of any other film that has just decided to go all out in this kind of way in a long time.
Right.
And it has Keaton leading a... great cat, Edward Norton.
Great to see Norton back doing proper good work, I will say.
Yeah, it is.
No argument there.
And I just I love the flow of it, I love the energy of it, and I would take this over so many other prestige-y picks any day because it's just doing something at least a little different.
Yeah. Anyway, I'm not sold. It won't be reappearing on my
list.
Oh,
I'm not trying to sell it to you. I wouldn't bother.
Tensions are getting frayed here on the scan.
As we move on to number four.
I'm sorry, Jed. I didn't mean to be quite so.
Number four, and I suspect this will be making another appearance in somebody else's list later on. Ex Machina.
Yes.
My third Oscar Isaac film in my top ten. Somebody's got a crush.
And the Oscar goes to...
Yeah, Isaac. Look at those eyes, baby. And that hair. Anyway, sorry.
I'm officially freaked out.
Getting a little uncomfortable in here. But no, basically...
Never trust a man with two first names.
But no, in terms of...
I just got that!
Yeah. In terms of films that are, again, relevant to this particular moment in time, and that sort of capture the spirit of 2015, I think that Ex Machina does a great job. It's about ethics in AI programming, really.
Actually, it's about ethics in video game journalism.
Yeah, that's what I was getting at. Yeah, but, no,
yeah, but I just had to say it's complete the gag. I didn't know.
Yeah,
I just felt
wrong. Apologies. But yeah, so basically an exploration of sort of bro coding culture. But I mean, in terms of artificial intelligence, right, the Turing test, there's a famous misconception about the Turing test, that the idea is that a computer, in order to be deemed intelligent, has to fool you into thinking it's a human. That's the simplified version of the Turing test.
Right.
That's not actually what the Turing test is.
Okay.
Turing test is that a computer has to pretend to be a woman and be as convincing as a man pretending to be a woman, which introduces a whole other sort of gendered component into it. And whatever about the Imitation Game, which we're not going to talk about, I don't think it's...
Thank you.
I think it does characterize Ex Machina in terms of stuff like that, in terms of 2015, in terms of issues about how people relate to the other, whether it's video gamers and programmers and industries that are traditionally masculine reacting to what they see as female encroachment in it, to issues more theoretical like the AI development.
And it is one of the best depictions of AI on screen.
Yeah, on a purely science fiction basis. Yeah. It's fantastic, but in terms of relevance, it landed at the perfect moment in cultural history, I think.
Well, I'm glad you two liked the movie. But... I don't. I watched it only recently, and while I get that it's... okay... There are some issues to be probed. I don't know. To be honest, it just felt like two twats flirting about a house and basically being served by fembots. And all that the character of Ava, Alicia Vikander, in a terrific performance, I will give her that. But I don't know. I felt like the whole idea of this Turing test and what they were doing, it ultimately became all too subservient to a plot that was nowhere near as interesting as it thought. And that's just pure Alec Garland. This is his directorial debut, but this is always what happens. Eventually, he can begin to probe an idea, and by the third act, it will run out of gas and he just gets, I don't know, people getting killed.
Okay, but I think, and this is the thing, like, I think Ex Machina has a fantastic third act. I think the ending is brilliant.
Yes.
I think, without spoiling it for anybody, it argues that the entire basis of the test is unethical, and that to question somebody's right, or to argue that they have to validate their existence,
human. Yeah, no,
is to fundamentally misunderstand.
But the point is, she's not.
But she's only other because she's deemed other. To force her to assert that is unethical, and to be complicit in that, even as a white knight. No,
sorry.
This is more philosophical than the whole film.
Yes, apologies, Jay.
To move on, I'm going to say it's my number four too. So,
yeah. Okay.
So that we have it on record as well. I adore Ex Machina.
Where am I on to number
four?
The Look of Silence. That's the look.
That's
of
not
silence.
Your cue to be silent.
And that's what it, that's
no,
what it feels
an
like.
There's not much to say about it. If you've seen The Act of Killing, this is essentially from the victim's side of it, I guess, for once, want of a better word.
That's the best
to some degree.
Pitch,
yeah, it's coming from that angle while still seeing the perpetrators swanning around Indonesia.
Yeah.
Again, this is a much more contemplative quieter film than The Act of Killing. It unfolds at a sort of slower pace, even outside the cities, I suppose, as well. It gives it that kind of gentler feel to it, but it doesn't dull the impact.
Okay.
It's still haunting me, and I've saw it months ago.
Hey, Jay, Snap. It's my number four as well.
Hey!
Oh, 2-4. That's fantastic.
Yeah, there we go.
We are.
Bit of consensus here.
Finally. you're absolutely right, Jay. And I actually prefer it to The Act of Killing because there's less of a novelty to it. There's nothing getting in the way of the righteous anger and sorrow that is at the heart of this story.
I'm not sure I would prefer ones either in some ways, but I know where you're coming from.
I mean, they're perfect companion pieces because The Act of Killing was, it was about the killers, and that was quite shocking.
Yeah.
And this is about the people who have had to suffer the consequences of it.
Yeah.
This massacre of a million Native Indonesians by these local rebel leaders.
Yeah. Who get to walk around still being in charge.
Yeah. And
so it's shocking. Like,
it is shocking. And both films are quite shocking, and they're of a piece.
Yeah.
And
no, I loved it.
Staggering achievement by director Joshua Oppenheimer. Best documentary of the year.
Yeah.
So with the
for me.
On to three
then, and Phil's already talked about this one actually.
Oh.
Yes, there we go. Suspense, dramatic pause, Birdman. Which I didn't like that much when I originally saw it. But I've seen it quite a bit since, and I think I've gotten a lot more cynical since as well. But I really, really, really responded to it. I think it's fantastic. I think, again, another film that captures 2015 in a nutshell. You were talking about the one take that's infamously not a one take.
Yeah, because how could anybody be so dumb as respond to that by saying it's one take?
No, but I think that's the entire point of it. The
idea that you've
reached the point where you can physically accomplish it, but it's also impossible to actually validate that you physically accomplished it as well. Like, you can accomplish the act of filming in one take, but you can also perfectly accomplish the illusion of filming in one take. And I think that works quite well with the themes, the idea of everything being unreal and ethereal and illusory.
The film is playing with the limits of its own reality. I mean, forget breaking the fourth wall, it's punched a hole in it.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I love the idea that as you film one take, right, the idea that one take should, in theory, anchor you to reality. Because it's without cuts or without edits, right?
It's like real life, like your own experience.
That's it exactly. But it can't, because the camera doesn't blink. So it's fundamentally different from human perception. But more than that, the longer the scene goes on, the more it breaks from reality, despite the fact that it claims to offer more of a facsimile. And I think that plays very well into the idea of everything being hallucination or a dream or fake. Anyway, so that was why I put it in third.
It was a fine film. It was number 11 for me. So just missed
it. I think it was just outside top 20 for me. I did like it somewhat, but didn't do much for me. And it's one I don't think will stand the test of time.
Jason, I think it will.
We'll see. Number three, The Tribe.
The Tribe.
Oh, I knew this was coming.
Of course you did. intense, gruesome, not particularly explicit, but it infers more than you see, except for the end scene.
You see oh my God.
Yeah. Extraordinary. No subtitles, just sign language.
Ukrainian sign language. And it tells you all you need to know.
Yeah, and it tells you all you need to know. It's the mini gangster epic played out in the School for the Deaf, essentially, with lots more violence and weirdness and
gruesome.
It broke me in half watching in JDIF or ADIF.
Yes.
But
what I missed this far will haunt me.
Yeah, I know. Have you seen it since?
No, I haven't caught it since.
Okay.
Hence, it is missing from my.
I think it's a stunning film, and one that I can't stop thinking of, quite frankly. So, yeah, number three, The Tribe.
I suppose there's an old thing where this old kind of trope where some people who create such vicious works of art, it turns out to be just really pleasant. I interviewed the director earlier in the year, and he was lovely.
Lovely, he seems like a lovely guy. He's a gent.
And I found it almost difficult to kind of link this full-on piece of work to this very friendly, round guy. He's just but you know, very pleasantly chatty.
Mm-hmm. Seems like a nice one, really nice book.
Yeah.
Bless you.
There was one great point where he had, just once in our conversation, he had to get his translator in. And we were talking about Mafia, but she always, whenever that kind of cropped up, she used to whisper Mafia. I thought, if it's the deaf Mafia, are you afraid they're listening in?
Boom.
Yeah. But yeah, I liked the trip, not as much as you, because it was just, I thought it was, it's full on enough. It doesn't have to be 2.25 hours to make its point. And the full on thing, it bothered me at first, some of the stuff that was in it. There was one scene in particular that I found quite harrowing, although less over time. But
okay,
I mean it makes its point and then some. It is quite staggering. It's like, again, like Goodbye to Language, it's like it's left its mark.
Yeah, most definitely. Good enough,
and I'll take that.
My number three Irish film, it's Terry McMahon's Patrick's Day.
That appears somewhere on my list, not top 10.
Absolutely floored me. It is
number 21.
Yes. I must confess, I haven't seen it.
It's a hard-hitting film. It's
very good.
It, as a study of mental illness and the consequences of living with people with mental illness and the sort of what the extent that some people will go to escape living with someone with mental
quite
illness.
Quite cinematic as well. It's not really. It's not a kind of. It's not shouting. Kind of, it's not a lecture, it's not hectoring you out. It's like the film works in and of itself
very much
while
so.
Still having this to say.
Well, that's it, exactly. It has the greatest scene in Irish, a single scene in Irish film, that I think, ever. To describe it is to ruin it, so
okay.
you kind of have to.
Well, no pressure there.
Are we talking the end?
Towards the end,
yeah.
But it's got great turns.
Beautifully shot.
Mo Dunford is
and he's great. Yes,
it's a
star-making
turn from him. He's extraordinary. It is just, I recommend seeking out. As you're talking about films that are kind of time capsules, are ones that are very prescient for the time that they're made in. Ireland is only, and the world is really only awakening to what mental illness truly is, or that people. That illness can take a mental form as well as a physical form, and this is a
superb explanation.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It is.
No, I liked it a lot. I liked it a hell of a lot.
Yeah, so I really do recommend checking it. Philip, three.
Number three for me is, I suppose it's Christmas, so I suppose we have to talk about Carol.
Hey!
I love Carol. It's the great romance of the year, and it is told with such visual and oral splendor and warmth, and it's a swoon of a film.
Yeah,
I love it. I love it. I love it because here's a pure romance. That could come with all the trappings of being a lesbian relationship, a period piece, all that kind of thing. But as the film goes on, less and less of that seems to matter. You're just caught up in this relationship between Cate Blanchett's Carol and Rooney Mara's Therese. And
that's the reason.
Therese Bellavette.
There's a way Cate Blanchett says that.
I know.
Yeah,
it's lovely.
It just ropes you in. And wraps you in its spell, and I adored it.
It looks beautiful.
Yeah,
it is stunning. Shot in 16, Super 16.
It's
super
shot 16 by Ed Lachman.
Yeah.
It's some of the best cinematography I've seen this year.
Yeah.
It's possibly the best editing I've seen this year.
Yeah.
It took me a while to get with it, which is why it didn't appear in my top 10. It's just outside it.
Yes.
It took me about 40 minutes or so to click with it, and I'm not sure what it was. And I rewatched May Well Compare
that
on my DVD. It may well do. But it took me a while. So and then when it did click, oh boy, God, it clicks.
Mm.
And that last scene,
that
broke me.
There are a lot of great endings this year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that ending and 45 years, they're neck and neck.
Yeah, and Ex Machina.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And although I'm the only person at the table who's going to say it, I also quite like a Most Violent Year's ending as well.
I like the ending.
I like that it was over.
Yeah. But I agree, Philip.
Carol,
it's a fine film.
Yeah.
Okay, we're
up
to the top two.
Number two.
And this has already been talked about. I suspect it's going to be the most frequently occurring film in all our top ten.
Oh, yes.
You know what this is.
Mad Max Fury Road!
Yay! And it's very hard to talk about, because I think, yeah, everybody's done a great job, except Jay. Sorry, Jay.
It's in there.
Jay
actually has an index list of his. He's very organized here.
He is.
Staples in it.
Yeah,
but it's
hey,
very
I work for the government. Get that free staples. All the staples. I get you staples by 3 o'clock tomorrow.
With nail polish.
Staple king of the Midwest here, bro.
But it's very hard to basically to follow up. It's an amazing film, fantastic momentum, one long chase scene that Jake Tane swarms. But I mean, it has perhaps my favorite visual of the year, which is that just that brief shot of Tom Hardy on the pendulum swinging up
while explosions rip through trucks behind him.
Physical effects, like actual practical explosions.
Plus a guitar flamethrower.
Yes, the dude
shit like
the
that.
That's warrior.
It's amazing. It's a double guitar flamethrower.
On a purely emotional level, like ignoring all the critical stuff about how it's a film for 2015 with sort of that
really,
embrace.
That was your theme, I thought.
Yeah, I know, we're going for it. Don't worry, we're going to circle back around to it.
Environmental impact.
Your goal so far, and then we'll come back.
Just like the film itself. We're going to get
it
there.
It has a lot.
Amazing. Two fantastic central performances.
Yeah.
Hardy is great. Hardy does more with a gesture than most actors do with monologues, I think.
Yeah. See Lawless.
Or
don't see Lawless.
That's more like
it. Listen to the soundtrack. Don't watch the movie.
He's also getting a lot of praise for Legend, which is apparently not a very good
film. It's not a good film. It's not a great film, but he gives two good performances.
So if you're going to watch Tom Hardy driving, Locke is the second best of the Tom Hardy driving films.
And don't forget the concrete.
You could say he's a solid foundation.
Stop.
In case our listeners don't get it, it's a film about concrete.
Yeah.
But anyway, Mad Max.
Mad Max, great. That was my number two. Jay!
Okay, we're into the number now. Number two, my favourite Irish film this year, In a House That Ceased to Be. Lovely cheery tale about domestic and sexual abuse in Ireland over the years. Great.
It's not noble.
And therefore it's good.
Yeah. It's astonishing film. And I cried, I think, four separate times in the cinema watching it. It's broke me. It's a devastating, occasionally uplifting, sometimes hilarious, angry, guilty, anguished film. It just has everything in it. It's glorious.
I was going to say, you've got a lot of emotion going on there.
It's a roller coaster. I came out of cinema, didn't know where to laugh or cry after crying on many times. Just thinking about it now, it's extraordinary film. It's absolutely devastating in its message and clear and concise. It knows exactly what it's about. The documentary, it's not finding its way. It knows exactly what it's doing.
Yeah, and it needs to be seen.
It's essential. It's an absolute essential film.
It's in my top 20 as well, and it needs to be seen.
I adore that. And in documentary terms, that and the Love of Silence have been the kind of heavyweights for me. But yeah, it seems to be. You really need to see it. Probably not a Christmas one, but you know, in January would be perfect.
And everybody's miserable.
Yeah.
At two, for you, and we're staying at home, it's Song of the Sea.
Philip is looking quizzical.
Is gorgeous.
Yes, it is.
It is so wonderfully inventive in how it's drawn and it tells a lovely, sweet story. I mean, yes, it's simplistic, but it is
kind of dazzling.
Yeah, it is,
and it's no more simplistic in my opinion than Kaguya is.
It
owes a lot of debt to Ghibli.
It really does,
and that's
really
no bad thing to say. You got eight from the best.
Yeah,
I think it's a glorious film. It made my top 20 towards the bottom of it, but I liked it.
The music
a hell of a lot.
Is wonderful. It's very Celtic. It's very,
very smart about its mythology.
Yeah.
Really plays with it. Really, really gorgeous film.
Yeah, no, it's
and
it's,
it made me laugh, and I really, really.
It's one that I will return to time and time again. I have a signed print at home of it on my wall for Andrew. In Andrew's room, and I also bought him the book, the artistry of the Song of the Sea, because this is the stuff that I will show him growing up that it will inform his cinematic
and it's the way it should be.
Yeah. It's just it's just a gorgeous piece.
He's determined to make him his mini-me.
But just to think,
and looks alone, it's working.
Okay.
There is a joke we made about whether such a thing as a mini Nile.
Hey,
regular it's size. He's yeah, tall. It's because he's tall. It doesn't it doesn't work well on audio.
Song of the Sea is a sumptuous film. I know Philip has his.
I have, but you know, I'm keeping stum.
Would you go so far as to say it's must see?
Hey,
yeah.
Yes, he would.
All the top 10 films.
Yeah.
He's singing his praises.
Number two.
Number two for me, it's one you've mentioned before, and from that loveliness, I'm going to drag you back down to earth with an almighty shitty pissy thud in the form of Hard to Be a God.
Oh, yes. I really need to see this, don't I?
Yeah, you do.
God damn it, why haven't I seen this?
This is a film...
3 hours?
You need to see the IMDb.
Right. I don't know if I like this film, but it's my number two for film of the year for a reason. As a vision of how you can create a world on film, I have not seen anything like this in possibly ever.
Wow.
This is a world that feels lived in. And
terrifying.
It is terrifying.
Yeah.
You know, you've seen films set in a certain time. This feels like it is
filmed in
a certain
time.
It is of that time. And I just pray to God that these characters in this world don't break through my screen and actually infect the real world, because it is just that all encompassing, and
it's visceral. It is just
and when we say visceral, we mean full of viscera. There are scenes where people are reaching in and scooping out, and
this is so mean.
It has, doesn't it, take any body horror that you've seen this year and you just
pardon all the language that I've had to use in describing it, but the best way I can put it, you know what we were talking about earlier about the Duke of Burgundy and his perfume credit? In Hard to Be a God, you feel like you can smell the shit.
Yeah, the shit credit.
Shit supplied by. Yeah, it is...
Odenwald.
Yeah, exactly.
There's an Adam Sandler 2015 joke to be made.
Yeah. I haven't seen it.
Well, talking about shit sandwiches, we'll get to that.
In a moment, but yes, Hard to Be a God, hard to watch, but
hard to forget.
Exactly.
Yeah. Oh, I like it. Yeah. That was nice.
Yeah, that's good work. I think you practiced that.
Yeah,
Darren.
We were on
number one.
One.
Yeah, no pressure. This has been mentioned before, so I'm just going to say it. Inside Out.
Inside Out.
Oh. I think it might be my favorite Pixar film.
Whoa.
Which is quite a boast.
That's interesting.
Given that up exists and given that...
I have to sit down and watch it again to see where it stands.
I've seen a few people say that.
Yeah.
The Incredibles
is not there.
I wouldn't agree, Wally. Okay. But if you're going to pick...
Was it Wally, the first half of Wally? Okay.
Mine would be Toy Story 2.
Yeah, it's
Toy Story 7, Toy Story 3, but...
Toy Story, yeah.
But I think Inside Out, given that they also released The Good Dinosaur this year, I think Inside Out is a clear Pixar winner.
How good Inside Out is that it made you forget that lava was before it.
Yeah.
I love you, and you love...
Oh, and the best thing about now watching it on Blu-ray is that you don't have to...
What's lava before it? You have
it is
option.
An extra. It is an extra.
Oh, it is, yeah.
Sad. Lava is also very 2015, but in some very unfortunate ways.
Actually, it's about ethics in volcano.
It's about ethics in volcano May December romance. May December romances. But yeah, no, Inside Out, just beautiful. I think that there's a great worth in telling kids that it's okay to feel sad sometimes.
Yeah.
That it's great if you can feel happy all the time, but you don't have to.
Yeah.
And for all our sakes, you shouldn't.
Yeah, it's not healthy.
Probably like just happy shit all the time.
Okay, well, also, it's not healthy for them.
Oh, right, yeah, for them, yeah. Sure, we're going to make it all about them.
Yeah.
If you want to be in a trouble little shit, by all means, be happy. But, you know, just take it down a notch. Yeah.
But no, in terms of film construction, I think it's brilliant. It's easy to follow. It takes a concept that's potentially difficult, very hard to explain.
And nails it down.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's got great characters, fully formed. As you said, two of your top three characters of the year came from it.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, I'm pointing at Phil here. I loved it. I loved every frame of it, and it might be my favorite Pixar film, and it's my favorite of the year.
Really?
So,
good.
Yeah, and there concludes, this concludes the populist section of the Scan On Top 10.
I'm not entirely sure about that.
I'll bring it back down to cold and glacial places.
Go on then, Jay.
When I'm one of the year, we're back in January again. Possibly the first one I've seen this year in the cinema or close to it.
Oh. You meet
her.
Oh!
That's good. Seems to be forgotten.
You like this a lot, but
love
wow,
I think it's an amazing film. I've seen it 3 times, and as a film about inhumanity, looking at humanity, and watching it in a cold, dispassionate, suffocating way, I think it's stunning. Carell's performance got lost in the whole. Look
is
at his
nose
kind of
yeah.
thing, yeah, which I think is nonsense on it, because I think his performance is terrific. I think it's how he speaks, how he phrases that kind of moneyed superiority that he kind of has, but does it really underplays it. Ruffalo and
Tatum are
excellent. Absolutely excellent.
There's three great performances there, because like you say, Carell is beautifully underplayed. Tatum is astoundingly intense at times.
So I think he's a really good actor. And
Ruffalo's the heart of it.
Yeah, oh, he is. You need them. Without him, that's a tough... Like, it's a tough watch anyway.
I think all three of them are crucial in what they bring to the table.
I think the cinematography by Greg Fraser is...
He's a fine...
Oh, it's beautiful work. I mean...
That Killing Them Softly, Bright Star...
Yeah.
Great.
He
did
Zero Dark Thirty, didn't he? What was that?
He did?
Yeah. Great work on that. I just think it's possibly the most intense kind of couple of hours of cinema I've had this year. I said before, the sight of Carell.
It's really Cosmo.
Yeah. that's true. That's true.
Well, just wait, Jesus.
The sight of Steve Carell jogging around the thing is still haunts me.
Still
in my dreams.
Like
it still won't go away. Yeah. I think it's one that its stature will grow. I think Bennett Miller's a really, really fine filmmaker. We were talking earlier about, like, say, J.C. Chandler, where we don't really rate his films, whereas Bennett Miller, I think he's 3 for 3. I really like all three of his films. And this is his best. And I think it's a 4.5 star, but it'll probably end up being a 5 star at some point, I would suspect.
I really need
just to be clear, this is Jay's favourite film of the year.
Yeah.
Not a harsh critic.
It's an impressive feat to be Jason Bourne.
Yeah, you earned that 0.5 star, baby. You earned that 0.5 star.
And a winner now, I'm sure.
I need to rewatch this because I liked it, but I didn't like it as much as you. I'm a bit. I know it's part of the point. I found it very distant, very chilly. But
it is.
It is part of the what it's about. But I. I did like it, but I suspect it. I think a rewatch could go. Yes. It's a low sport, and I don't like to see you being low. Vanessa Redgrave.
Oh, it's
Mauro,
great.
Which is great.
As is Sam Miller.
Yes. She's had a great
year.
She's
had a very good year.
Yeah, she's on the way back. High Rise next year. Not a big fan of the film. She's good in it, though.
Niall.
My number one film of the year is mostly because I'm a sucker for absolutely sumptuous visuals. It is it's Carol.
I can't argue with that.
I saw it, it jumped immediately, not to number one. It is. Wow, is that a gorgeous film? Holy mother of God. It's so well acted. It's so well shot. It's just beautiful. It's a beautiful story. It's a beautiful and it's beautifully shot. It's a lovely way
it's
to spend
so tender
that
it's
2 hours.
It's a fragile thing.
Yeah,
it's such a light touch.
It's a believable relationship. It's a warm relationship. You want the best things for them. You know it can't happen. It is. You know.
Yeah,
I remember there's one scene towards the end where Therese calls Carol and just. In a whisper, but so breathy, she says, "I miss you." Your heart just rends, and it's full of moments like that.
And the Super 16 was just the perfect choice for it because it puts it in the right
era
for a
start.
Yeah,
I agree.
And then
but it gives us
you get the texture,
softness.
You get that. Feel of film that the digital just can't reproduce. You know?
It can't. I mean, it really can't. I mean, and digital cinema gets its place, of course it is.
But it
works very effectively in a lot of films, but not for something like that.
So, Carol is, if I wanted to win all the Oscars, I'd love to I see would have no chance. I've seen Irish actually. Film win, but I would. I would not begrudge Carol.
Presumptive nominees, I think Carol would deserve Best Picture. I'll be honest, I think its momentum is starting to peter out.
Yeah, maybe. It needs a shot in the arm.
It does.
I'd say of the potential winners, it's probably my favourite.
Yeah.
I agree. I suspect when the Best Picture nominees are out, it'll be right on the top.
Yeah,
top
of it'll have a chance.
Oh, definitely.
Philip.
My number one of the year. You'll find a few common threads between yours and mine, and it's one that's been mentioned before. Pinastri.
Ah.
The Duke of Burgundy.
Ah, excellent. I'm glad I got in there.
Yeah. Another swoon of a film featuring lesbian hijinks. But
it's a theme running through.
Yeah. But it's, very similar to Carol, in that it normalizes what once would have been seen as an unusual kind of relationship.
Yeah.
And not only because it's two women, but it's also two women in a very serious sadomasochistic relationship.
Yeah.
You know, and not to mention an age gap. But the film takes all those aspects and turns them almost into a fairy tale.
Yeah.
A fairy tale infused with a gorgeous look. You can always reach out and feel the fabrics and the butterflies fluttering at you. The sound design is astonishing. Just every creak is accentuated. It's the crack of the whip.
There's a couple of repetitive kind of sounds and visions before action happens, if you will. That you see door closing, that kind of things tightening and stuff.
It's all beautiful,
suggestive. Sounds like gorgeous, like that.
Yeah, it's. I love it. It takes potentially cold ideas and brings them home.
Yeah, is it my top five?
So four different number ones.
Four different number ones and
very different number tens.
Darren has listed.
I did sort of a rough tab as we were going there, so we actually have three. So basically, of the films that were listed, common to all of us, which again, very disparate lists. But we have three tied for third place. So we have, and it's very disparate. So we have Mad Max, Ex Machina, and The Look of Silence, to be tied for third place, which is amazing. Ex Machina was mine and Niall's fourth place, and Look of Silence was your and Jay's fourth place as well.
I get you.
And Mad Max was the only one to appear on three lists.
Wow.
Yeah. List making is fun, kids. Try to know.
It really is.
At number two, the Duke of Burgundy. Which is cool. That's off Jane Phil's list. Very highly placed. And at number one, Carol, off Phil and Niles.
Just going on official film of the year.
I can't argue that.
Carol.
Once I can rest easy on the film, that's number one. Even if it's not my pick, I'm fine. Yeah.
Carol.
And I'm more than ready. Number two.
So. Yeah, that's pretty good going.
And
that's a good
theme.
Just to give you an idea of how eccentric the scan on this is, at fourth place is a tie between Inside Out and Hard to Be a God. now there is a double feature.
There you go. There. No, kids, stay for the second.
I'm about to say you might want to open with Hard to Be a God so you can finish with.
Let's keep them. It's a reward. That's true.
Still, I'm delighted with that.
I'm quite happy with that.
Carol is flung out of space.
Yeah, indeed.
Goodness, people, I think.
Right, so on to the surprises of the year. We start with Darren again. What was your surprise of the year?
Mad Max, quite soon. if somebody had told me a year ago that Mad Max was going to be a good film or potentially one of my favourite films of the year and a potential Best Picture nominee, I would have sort of laughed at that.
So you knew it would be good, you just didn't think it would be that good.
I was sceptical. To be fair, I was sceptical. Keep in mind, last Mad Max film was Beyond Thunderdome.
There was rumors of, trouble.
Normally when a film
reshoots...
That
was the thing where Warner Brothers just said, do more.
Yeah. But I mean, in any film, reshooting is generally not an indicator of quality. So that was my pleasant surprise of the year.
Just a couple... I really enjoyed it. Didn't make my top 10, but it kind of just outside my top 20, and I wasn't really expecting much at all, but I really, really liked Straight Outta Compton.
Yes, I haven't seen
it. It's quite a long film, but I didn't feel it for a second, And it's a little sanitized in terms of the people that are producing it, but good yeah. God, to hear that music on the big yeah. screen. And Ice Cube's son is magnificent.
It's uncanny.
Yeah, and but he's great, and he gives me personality. It was, I really liked it.
It was in my pool of 30 that I drew from, because it's very conventional. Like, it hits all the music biopic beats.
But it does it well. Like, when it's done that well, you don't mind.
Yeah, that's
you know, and the other one, because I wasn't expecting to like it at all, was Mrs. America, which I really liked until it fell apart in the last act. I was expecting to hate it.
That was mostly my doing, I suspect.
And my own. I saw Boy Where You're Young.
I would, just to bring it back to Taylor Compton, one of the big trends that I noticed this year was just a fantastic use of music telling stories.
Yeah.
Or more particularly, stories about the music. Straight Out of Compton,
Love and Mercy
for the Beach Boys, Eden, which was also just outside my top 10.
My surprise of the year, Eden.
Ah, nice segue.
Very nice.
Because I did not expect to like a film about dance music, because I'm not a dance music-y fan, and it's just extraordinary.
I haven't seen it.
I love it. Yeah. I'm on DVD now.
Go
have a look. I really enjoyed it as well. And again, the time flies, even though it's well over 2 hours long.
Oh, it is. Yeah, it is its biggest problem is that the end of Act 1, start of Act 2, and you're already an hour and 20
But again, you think they've forgotten about it.
Oh, God.
But no, it feeds into the themes. Arrested Development. That's what I loved about Eden. Despite the music and the style and the charismatic performances, there's a lot going on in terms of, you know, how long can you pursue a dream? How long can you drag this first fun act out? And then, no, harsh reality comes crashing in.
Yep.
That's what I liked about it a lot.
So your surprise of the year?
My surprise of the year, it's not a film that threatened my top 10 by any matter of means, but I was just astonished to see this director actually do a good film for the first time in ages. The Martian, Ridley Scott's film. I enjoyed the heck out of it.
I was expecting to enjoy it more.
But you did enjoy it.
But I didn't.
Is that because of people talking about how much they enjoyed it?
I mean, I went in thinking, listen, this Scott, any kind of return to form Scott is good for me.
Yeah.
Because it's been a while.
It's a damn fine start.
I like the first hour of it. And I got progressively worse after that.
I was with it all the way through. And some parts of it don't work. Some characters could use a lot more development.
Yeah.
But Damon and the design and the look of the thing keep
Damon
you
carries
going.
The whole thing, like, he's
he does. And again, Matt Damon, you know, for all his popularity as an actor,
I think quite
undervalued.
No, he is, and he can carry wherever you want him to carry.
And I think that that came out around the same time as The Walk and so like that. So I remember sort of Octoberish having sort of like a weird grown up cinema feel to it, sort of like a movie you take your grandparents to, sort of feel to it.
Yeah. And Everest came out.
And Everest as well. Yeah. So
well,
sort
of
like
those three, I think The Martian walked.
No, The Martian. Yeah.
Oh, I've seen those three, and The Martian's a better film.
No, but
that doesn't necessarily
mean
there
was that period where you had this sort of.
Yeah, yeah.
These would have been summer films in the '90s, except summer. I think you said summer got too big for.
Yeah. So they moved out.
Which I actually quite liked. I liked having something to fill, because traditionally the gap between summer and Oscar season is just dead zone.
I agree. Now we just have
to get through March.
Yeah.
Oh, don't worry. We've got Batman and Superman.
But
more on that.
Released on my birthday. I take it personally as an insult.
As you should.
You should not pick a fight with this guy.
They'll move it.
Yeah.
Right, where are
we? We'll move on there.
So, speaking of which, what about our disappointments of the year? Darren?
I feel sort of churlish, because none of these are bad films. So it's really more of a disappointment with sort of the process around it, and it happens every year, where you have the awards circuit, and you have films that are hyped, and you have films that you are told are brilliant, and they arrive, and they're good to very good, but because expectations are what they are, because they've taken so long to travel back around.
It's joy.
Yes, it's clearly joy. No, it's say Force Majeure, right, which I spent most of 2014 hearing about how excellent it was, and it arrived and it was great, but after hearing so many people talk for so long,
I liked it.
Same is arguably true of Song of the Sea as well, which had done this big circuit before coming back to Ireland, and Room, perhaps controversial.
2016, but yeah, okay.
Oh, sorry, apologies. It will be my biggest disappointment of next year.
Oh,
I am the ghost of Christmas.
Polish up that list.
All right, sorry, but we'll talk about that later.
We will be talking about the new year, so it's just
certainly.
Like,
I assume.
I wrote down three disappointments. Two we've already covered with Ex Machina and The Most Violent Year.
Ex Machina being our joint third favourite film of the year.
Not mine.
or mine.
But the other one, this is one that I quite liked, but I expected like a hell of a lot more. Some degree, when something comes with a reputation, I think you're right, and I think maybe the reputation can precede it a little too much. And it's A Pigeon Sat on a Branch, Reflect on Existence. And I'm a fan of...
You're a big Roy Anderson.
I am. You Living is masterpiece for me, and...
Songs from the Second Floor.
I really, really like
it
as well.
It was just merely good.
It was good, yeah, it was fine. It was a little too long. Or maybe it wasn't as long as it, but it felt a little longer. I don't know.
This is the trilogy capper, and it's definitely the most ambitious of the three.
Yeah.
And it's the longest of the three. And even though it's not that much longer, you do feel
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I did. And I was fine with some great stuff in it, as there always is with Rams, because they're essentially a series of sketches anyway, quite a lot back. So some of it does work clearly.
Oh,
but
like some of
it didn't cohere.
No.
Like, say, You Living did for me. So I was just a little disappointed.
I liked it, but, you know, I absolutely hear what you're saying. I liked the three as.
I wish
as
I liked it more.
That's all. That's why it's disappointing. You wanted it to be exceptional.
Yeah, I did. And
most people said it was, but not quite
just
there.
Just merely
really
good. That's it. But yeah, my biggest disappointment of the year is Spectre.
I'm surprised
anybody
was
not more people. I've seen it
as a Bond fan and as someone who is very fond of Casino Royale and Skyfall. This was Quantum of Solace bad. Almost.
You're really on it down and out.
I did not like Spectre.
He's right to be. It's not good.
Yeah. I think the first hour is legit.
First hour plods. I mean, it's just hop, 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 plot point.
Like every other Bond film.
Yeah, no, but this one does
this
even more. Exactly. And
it's a slight hand.
It should be disguised better because Sam Mendes is back of the helm.
Yeah.
But it's the script. It is this.
Yeah.
It's just. Oh, by the time we actually get around to
Purvis and Wade need to be jettisoned.
No, they're not the problem. I mean, they've co-wrote Skyfall to forget.
Yes, with Logan.
Yeah, but Logan was...
Which is really odd to talk about the writer of Star Trek Nemesis as the man to save your franchise.
Yeah.
But then again, all three of them...
Logan was involved in this too.
But all three of them wrote it along with Jez Butterworth.
Yeah, Jez Butterworth.
Maybe
yeah.
he should be jettisoned. Yeah.
I'd say start fresh with all of them.
Yeah,
I
agree.
I would argue Spectre is a perfectly adequate Bond film.
It's
following
the
a
best of. It's everything you liked before.
Except we got that with Skyfall.
It is a lot better.
Yes.
Yeah. I argue this. I haven't seen it, but I do argue that Skyfall was perfect to reset to some degree. Like, restart the whole
thing. You don't need to do it all down, you're doing it again.
Yeah.
You particularly don't need to do the we're shutting down MI6 again.
Be there, but no.
It's basically you're being disavowed. The Mission Impossible.
Again.
But the. In a year that Star Wars did it right, we have, you know, we're taking an old recipe and making a wordy new film out of it. We have Spectre and Jurassic World.
And Terminator Genesis. Though we seem to forget about that one.
I decided not to put them on my disappointment list because they're so terrible.
Because you were
eagerly anticipating a post-Cameron Terminator film.
Yeah. He did praise it after all.
The thing is now, we're in an interesting time where, you know, you're going to be looking at your franchise and wondering the ones that are getting kind of rebooted and sequels and new, and you know, how will it go? Like you say, Star Wars got it right. James Bond has got it wrong. Terminator's got it wrong.
Fast and Furious got it right. It knows what it's doing.
Yeah.
Jurassic Park has got it wrong. I'm delighted to say that Creed has got it right.
Yeah. 1.8 billion.
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
Yeah. So, you know, it's cagey.
Yeah.
You just don't know what you're going to get.
I wonder if that's a sort of a 21st century thing. And obviously it's driven by market force and money and stuff. But the idea
that's
stories
not an excuse.
Don't end. Like the idea that was
Bastion and the Luck Dragon. And
never-ending
story.
Yeah, but in terms of like... Yeah, just the current climate and all that sort of stuff where you have the legacy of the Cold War and all that stuff.
Who knows?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm tired and pretentious.
Yeah, me too.
Philip, biggest disappointment of the
year? Biggest one, I could have picked Spectre. There's a lot of things I could have picked, even stuff I liked that I didn't like as much as I should, but eventually I just had to go with the purest example of a film where I was really looking forward to it, and it completely fell through, and that's Sunset Song, Terrence Davies' film, which...
We're just getting masterpiece raves off some people.
Of some people, and then there are some people who don't like it.
Yeah.
First among them, me. I love Terrence Davies' work.
As do I.
This was just so soapy and so plodding, and it's I just could not get on board with it at all.
Yeah.
Things like it is actually quite handsomely shot, and Agnes Dane gives a fine lead performance,
but it's twee and it's soapy and
it's very disappointing. This is a dream project, wasn't it?
It was. He's been hoping to do this for years, but
finally get the capital and
the money is there, and he has a pedigree with doing adaptations. Like, he did fine jobs on Deep Blue Sea and House of Mirth.
Yeah,
but no.
That's very, very much a pity.
Yes, indeed. But as you say, some people do like it, so I don't know. I was hoping to maybe rewatch it, but it's leaving cinemas, and no.
I'll catch it at some point.
So then, that leaves just one other thing as far as rankings go. What did each of us decide was
the worst film of the year?
Darren.
I'd like to go first.
You've been going first all evening, so this is...
this is old hat. Yeah. All right, fine. There are a lot of contenders, but it has to be a film in wide release.
Yeah.
It can't be a festival pick. It can't be anything that's sort of snuck by on Netflix or whatever. It can't be Zombievers.
If you had wanted, you could have picked Beast of No Nation. That would have been acceptable.
But that is not... But
or see, Ridiculous of, Six.
Beast of No Nation is a great film.
Yeah.
Pixels.
Hey.
Let's go with Pixels. Because Lord knows you need to make Q-Bert a comic supporting character. But not only that, you have to have him urinating on things to make it funny. It's terrible. It's Adam Sandler.
You had me at Adam Sandler. I'll never watch it.
Given that this year has seen the release of The Cobbler, The Ridiculous Six, and Pixels.
He's had a stellar year.
He has had a phenomenal year.
Oh, and Ridiculous Six is the capper on the...
That's only the first of his four picture Netflix deal.
So that tells me that might be cancelled.
Well, in fairness, I thought the word of mouth on Ridiculous Six was it's not as terrible as you think it is.
No, the word of mouth is
it's pretty much Adam Sandler.
It's precisely, it hits that market.
Yeah,
But yeah, so that was my worst film, Pixels.
I'm going to spend any time on it. Terminator Genisys is an abomination of a film.
Fan fiction, basically.
And what I will say about it, and I've said it before about it, and you're all going to disagree about it. And
I know you don't like Terminator 2, yes.
Terminator 2 set all this in motion.
Oh, come on. By the same logic, The Wrath of Khan is the worst Star Trek film. Because it set everything in motion.
No, it's not. I'm saying the blame for where we end up is at Cameron's door.
It's always Cameron.
It's always Cameron.
But by the same logic, then, Goldfinger is the worst Bond film because it set everything up. That's Bond.
I think Bond is different. Bond is a reset start to get a new actor in. This is... Once you lead down the road...
Yeah, but see, the thing is, Jay, you don't like Terminator 2, whereas we do.
Yeah.
And the problem is, it could go either way. If you want to do any kind of reset, you can do it.
Yeah, badly. You should just reset and start again. I mean, I don't
Maybe.
See why
considering how much they've screwed up the timeline, they might as well.
Yeah, but that's the point. Why do this? Like, I mean...
Because it's a franchise property. Yeah, people like, yeah...
But it's dead in the water.
Yeah,
There's
the odd impression...
I haven't seen it, but I know that.
It's...
Like continuity and nostalgia. And if you just rebooted it, you would lose all of that.
Boo-hoo.
I know.
Arnie can't live forever.
I'm stating the hypothetical.
They've lost every ounce of credibility that the era had, if you had much left.
But about to say, surely 3 and 4 did that. Genesis is...
Like 3 and 4 now, people are going, where did that bad actually?
Well, compared to Genesis.
You know, there's a limit to that. I don't know. I don't care. I'll probably never watch another Terminator film, except in case you watch Terminator when it's on TV and go, James Cameron, once you knew had a simple idea and you executed perfectly. Anyway, we move on.
Lost River.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought.
Although I'm not as bad on it as you are.
Which is odd for a man with a deep affection for Ryan Gosling.
It's a close run thing between it and Miss Julie over which one do I want more of my time back for, but it is.
It's not good.
But the thing is,
it has aspirations, and there are hints of good.
There are occasional.
The cinematography mostly,
and it's
a couple of performances.
To hate somebody who loves David Lynch so much that he would steal pretty much an entire film.
Ryan. And who loves Nicholas Winding Refn so much that he basically stole his entire look.
It's not good.
No,
she wore purple.
It could have been really good.
But there's no script there at all.
Yeah.
Oh. It's a mess.
Hot
mess.
Yeah.
A pretty mess sometimes, but a hot mess. Just a mess.
It's a mess.
He hated it.
Yeah, I don't blame him. Yeah, I don't think any of us were impressed with that at all. I was going to go for Pixels for a long time there, but at the end of the day, people know that's rubbish. I am here to remind the world that Jurassic World is an abomination.
was on my bottom list on the Watch Genesis.
It is.
They both compete in a swamp.
Yeah, so this is. It is.
It's an unqualified disaster.
A disaster from start to finish. Practically every decision. I like
those numbers, but.
yeah, who wouldn't? But I feel like every practical decision on the script, direction, everything that could go wrong does go wrong. And I actually cannot think of a saving grace in it.
Judy Greer's in
it. It ends.
That's about it.
Yeah. Judy Greer plays the same character.
On the lamest shot possible.
It's hysterical. Yeah. It's really funny.
Like, oh, look, we're going for an iconic moment, but eh.
Is that dinosaur running? Is it running with
in
its
heels?
Like,
yeah. But this is not running in heels.
Yeah. I think we wasted enough air on these two films.
Strangest bad guy of the year.
But he was fantastic in Daredevil, and I kind of like that he delivers the line, "If only we'd had these guys in Tora Bora," with utmost conviction. He's I don't believe Chris Pratt as the Navy SEAL who happens to be in touch with his face. I don't believe Bryce Dallas Howard as, you know, a woman who wears high heels and gets lectures on how to be a mother from Chris Pratt. Yeah. But I do believe Vincent D'Onofrio as a man who genuinely buys that sending velociraptors into the Middle East will solve America's foreign policy problems. That is
a
great performance
plan.
Yeah.
Oh, let's not talk about that anymore.
We'll leave it for the year. We'll do our preview in the new year.
Yes, indeed we will. Okay. Merry Christmas and Happy New Year, one and all.
Yeah, what Philip says.
Yay!